Ray v. Williams.
May it please the court, Mr. Ricky Powell will present argument for petitioner. Mr. Powell has reserved 5 minutes to rebuttal.
May it please the court, in this case. The petitioner in this case believes that the court of appeals brought 2 points of error to this court. Basically, in the submission of a joint enterprise question and a submission of an agency question, we do not believe there was sufficient, any evidence of legal sufficiency to warrant submission of this. In order to understand, to fully understand this case, you need to understand a few of the details, a few of the facts that were given at the trial. The Rays, Mr. and Ms. Ray, moved to Fort Worth in 1948 and had lived there continually until they both retired in 1983. The evidence was clear that when they left Fort Worth in 1983, they had sold their liquefied petroleum business in Keller, Texas, a suburb of Fort Worth. They didn't lease the land that they had leased for pasturing cattle. Ms. Ray had quit her teaching position, and they moved out to Mount Pleasant, which was one of them's hometown. And that's where they intended to retire. However, they had multiple opportunities over the years to come back to Fort Worth. For one, their doctors were in Fort Worth. Their tax consultant was in Fort Worth. They had friends and relatives in Fort Worth. Now, on the day of this raid, the Rays drove from Mount Pleasant to Fort Worth to deliver papers that their tax consultant had requested. But while they were here, Ms. Ray went to a department store to buy facial cream that she couldn't find anywhere else. And Mr. Ray got his hair cut by his barber of over 30 years. While at the barber shop, they learned that there was a shopping center being constructed in an area where they had once leased some land. And they decided to do what people always do when they go back to the old hometown, is to go see how the area had changed. And it was during this drive up to see how this shopping center was progressing that they were involved in the wreck that brings us here today. Now, with these facts in mind, I direct the court's attention to what I believe is the first point of error committed by the appellate court regarding the submission of a joint enterprise question. When this court decided Shoemaker in 1974, it adopted the restatement second of torts version, or that definition of joint enterprise, which in turn greatly changed the joint enterprise doctrine in the state of Texas. By adding the element of a community of pecuniary interest among the members of the group, this court stated that it would henceforth be avoiding the imposition of a basically commercial concept upon relationships not having that characteristic. And the narrow question before this court, and upon which I believe the appellate court erred, was whether or not the trip of Mr. and Ms. Ray from Mount Pleasant, Texas to Fort Worth to deliver papers to their tax consultant concerned a community of pecuniary interest. In other words, did they have a business or commercial purpose in this trip? And I believe the answer is clearly no. While I recognize and I brief the fact that the Rays did characterize their trip to Fort Worth to deliver these papers as business, that is not what was intended by the Supreme Court in the Shoemaker case. They didn't mean go to do business. They meant commercial activity. That's why they said the imposition of a basically commercial concept. And it is the commercial nature of the enterprise which is the key. And that is exactly what is missing from this case.
Can retired people whose sole primary source of income, investments, can they ever engage in a business purpose?
Most certainly, Justice Corn. They can, and had that been the case, I wouldn't be standing here. But I agree that they can. They can be involved in a community of pecuniary interest by going out and looking at investments and things of that nature. And certainly that would hold true in the case for retired couples, just like it would anyone else. But the appellate court here held specifically that they found the pecuniary interest requirement in the fact that the Rays had delivered these papers to their tax consultant, and the fact that they had characterized their trip as doing business. Now, if the Rays, the fact that the Rays said they did business with the tax consultant rises to the level of the pecuniary interest requirement in the Shoemaker Court, then every husband and wife in this state is in trouble every time they go to the grocery store to do business, every time they go to the bank to deposit their checks, if they go in their jointly owned car. They're in a joint enterprise.
Does the record reflect exactly what the nature of the transaction with the CPA was?
No, Your Honor. And that is also crucial. The record does not reflect what type of papers these were, the number of papers, whether this was a personal tax return, whether this was a commercial taxes that the...
Wouldn't that be necessary to establish a so-called pecuniary interest element?
I believe it would be, Your Honor, because if we're talking about personal income taxes, this is something that is required by law. You can hardly be engaged, at least in my opinion, in a business enterprise or in a commercial venture by paying personal income taxes. Now, since the Shoemaker case has been decided, there have been relatively few cases on joint enterprise, none of which have addressed the definition of pecuniary interest. None have discussed what business interest meant in the context of the joint enterprise doctrine. However, the definition of business and the definition of business as stated in the respondent's brief is something, it's commercial activity engaged in as a means of livelihood. And in this particular case, I feel like that is a correct definition of what business means. One can hardly be doing business with the IRS in that context. At least I know personally, I never come out earning anything from the IRS. They seem to win at every angle. I just don't feel like that is a business activity.
How do you know they were visiting with their CPA with respect to the IRS?
Well, just the sheer mention of the fact that this was their tax consultants. Could have been IRS, could have been any other governmental entity, I suppose. I just, assuming, of course, it's the IRS.
Could have been with respect to an agricultural exemption. Could have been with respect to a number of matters that tax consultants deal with.
Well, I suppose that is correct. However, the evidence in this case indicates that they didn't own any land except what they lived on, a few lots around it.
Well, at any rate, it would be necessary to establish that in order to establish pecuniary interest element. The fact that the record is void as to the nature of their transaction with the tax consultant does not meet the burden of establishing pecuniary interest.
And that's my point. A simple question of what did these papers concern?
The fact that they went to see the tax man establishes nothing.
And that's why we're here. That's why we believe that this test is not being utilized in the proper manner. These could very well have been personal income taxes. And if they were, the fact that they did business with their tax consultant, I still don't believe is what the court meant in Shoemaker. That's not a commercial concept. Now, that's a requirement by law. You don't come out as a married couple or as a single person or anywhere else with the IRS. It can't be business as far as we're concerned. Now, based upon the definition of business, that is a means of earning a livelihood, in various other dictionaries it's stated as a profit motive, but based upon that definition, there is absolutely no evidence, there was none at the trial court level, none at the appellate court level, that these papers that they were delivering to this tax consultant concerned their mutual pecuniary interest or meant a pecuniary interest test.
If you're correct about that, what judgment is Arthur entitled to?
What we're requesting is
23% of 13.
23%, and while I realize that is a small sum in comparison to what comes up here a lot of the times, it's the principle and it's the precedent that it sets in this state for married couples. is what is the importance here. The petitioner submits it under the law, as announced in Shoemaker, and under the facts of this particular case, that there was legally insufficient evidence to warrant the submission of a joint enterprise question. And on this ground, the judgment should be reversed and rendered with recovery to Arthur Ray. Now, the second error that we believe was committed by the appellate court had to do with the submission of the agency question. The agency question was out of a Texas pattern jury charge, and it asked two things, that Mrs. Ray was acting for and was operating the vehicle in the furtherance of a mission for the benefit of Arthur Ray, and that she was acting subject to his control as to the details of the mission. And I believe the evidence in this case is legally insufficient to warrant the submission of that question. The agency relationship requires an agent on the one hand and a principal on the other. You have to have someone directing the activity, someone at least that has that right. When the Rays decided to come to Fort Worth that day, it was for their mutual benefit. They came to see their tax consultant. They didn't come to see Mr. Ray's tax consultant, but there. So therefore, the trip was for the benefit of both of the parties. It wasn't just for Mr. Ray's benefit. Who is the principal and who is the agent in a situation like that? What you basically have is two agents, if you believe that they still have a principal and agency relationship. Two agents acting on behalf of each other and on behalf of themselves. Furthermore, there is no evidence that Mrs. Ray was subject to the control of Arthur Ray. First, the car that they were driving in was in both of their names. It was a jointly owned automobile. Each had the right to control it. Each had an equal right. However, the evidence at the trial showed that they owned two vehicles. Ms. Ray testified that the car was my car. Anytime we went anywhere in the car, I drove the car. We referred to it as my car. He had a pickup. He drove the pickup. I didn't like driving the pickup. If we went somewhere in the pickup, he drove it. If we went somewhere in the car, I drove it. This shows a relinquishment of his right of control, I believe. From the evidence, you cannot say that he was subject to the control or that she was subject to control by Mr. Ray. However, if this court believes that joint ownership in this particular case means that these married couples have an equal right to control, then you're basically getting back to the old joint enterprise doctrine, because both of these individuals had a mutual interest in going where they were going, and so they met the common purpose or common object test of the old joint enterprise doctrine. Then you say that simply because the certificate of registration of the car was in both of their names, and simply because that certificate is there, they have a joint right to control the automobile. Well, then you're getting back to the old joint enterprise doctrine again. You're saying now that they each have an equal right to control the object. So the gains that we've made in the Shoemaker case have been circumvented now in the agency case, at least involving a husband-wife where they're driving a jointly owned conveyance. In summary, the petitioner asserts that the application of the joint enterprise doctrine in this case was broader than was intended by the Shoemaker court, and that there was no evidence to support the submission of the question based on the fact that there was no evidence of pecuniary interest. Furthermore, respondeat superior was not proved. It was not supported by the evidence. There was no evidence that Mrs. Ray acted for and in behalf of Mr. Ray in coming to Fort Worth. There was no evidence that she acted subject to his control. Therefore, we believe the judgment should be reversed and rendered on the remainder of the jury questions, excluding the joint enterprise and the agency question.
Any questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. John Casey will present argument for respondent.
May it please the court. The
Petitioner's counsel leaves a lot unsaid with respect to the evidence that does support the jury's joint enterprise finding. The finding that the jury made in this case on joint enterprise was not a fluke. It was based on the direct admissions of the Rays that the purpose of their trip to Fort Worth was for a business purpose. But in addition to that, there was circumstantial evidence that was offered basically through the testimony of the Rays themselves, which explained what they meant by business trip, business purpose. The record shows that the Rays were highly educated individuals. This is not a typical or average retired couple. Mrs. Ray had a doctorate in public administration and had served in school administration and as a teacher for over 30 years. Mr. Ray was a professor of psychology at Texas Christian University. At the time of the accident, the Rays did own a business and operate a business. The record shows that at the time of the accident, the Rays had operated a log home building business out of an office that they had constructed onto their house in Mount Pleasant. Immediately prior to the time period that the accident took place, the Rays had been engaged in various other business ventures, one of which, a couple of which counsel has mentioned this morning, a gas distributorship business, and in addition to that, a cattle leasing operation, which they operated in Keller and in the location of the accident in question here. What the jury saw were two individuals who, of course, they did not get to observe Mr. Ray. Mr. Ray at the time, I believe, was deceased or sick. But what the jury saw from his testimony right into evidence and Mrs. Ray's live testimony was two individuals who understood what business meant, what the term business meant, and the connotations it carried with it. Throughout the trial, Mrs. Ray repeatedly referred to her business interest and the Ray's business interest as business and distinguished those interests and those activities from personal interest and activities.
What was the evidence that they were traveling on this particular occasion pursuant to business that meets the pecuniary interest definition?
Well, Justice Gamage, I don't believe there's any direct evidence other than their own testimony,
the loose term, loose usage of the term business, you know, I've got some business to do, I'm going to run some errands. That's not business. That doesn't involve pecuniary interest.
That's
the fact that she may have said, well, you know, yeah, we went and did some business. I had to go get some makeup, and he had to get his hair cut, and we had to drop by our CPA. That, in and of itself, doesn't establish the element of pecuniary interest, which is required to have legally constituted business in this case. What evidence is there?
Your Honor, I think the evidence that does establish that this was, that their trip to Fort Worth was connected with the business interest is the fact that they were at the time involved in a log home building business. They
were. Is there evidence to show that they were traveling to Fort Worth pursuant to their log home business or their liquefied gas business or their cattle raising business or any other pecuniary enterprise which I think would traditionally be one engaged in for profit? Is there any evidence to show that they were traveling to Fort Worth pursuant to any of those enterprises?
Your Honor, I think that, as I said, there's no direct evidence of that. I think the only inference that can be drawn for this, and keeping in mind that this is a legal sufficiency point before the court, and the court can look at the inferences to be drawn, I think the only reasonable inference that can be drawn from the raised admissions, from the fact that they were engaged in log home building business at the time, that they had other business interests, and that they carefully distinguished their business activities from their personal activities during trial, does raise an inference at a very minimum that their trip to the tax consultant to visit with him, as they characterized it, had a business interest involved. That's That's what I submit, Your Honor, is the evidence.
That may be a scintilla, but I'm not sure it gets you across that line.
Well, Your Honor, I would submit that that it's more than a scintilla, that the inferences raised from the evidence, in addition to the fact that the Rays did not, this was not just a slip of the tongue when they described their trip to Fort Worth. I've counted at least five instances during trial where Mrs. Ray described her trip to Fort Worth as a business trip.
What were they going to do with the tax consultant? Surely there's some evidence on that.
Excuse me, Your Honor?
No one asked what specifically they were consulting with the tax consultant about?
Your Honor, on cross-examination, counsel for the respondent took Mrs. Ray through a series of questions where she repeatedly stated that she was in Fort Worth for business. No one did ask her directly whether her trip to the tax man was a business trip. She described it herself as going to Fort Worth to transact business with the CPA. We believe is that under this court's decision in Mendoza versus Fidelity and Guaranty, which is found at 606 Southwest 2nd 692, that these admissions constitute judicial admissions, the admission that they did come to Fort Worth for a business trip and for business purposes, that were conclusive on the issue of the element of business purpose and joint enterprise theory, and relieved the respondent of any of its burden of putting on any further proof of commercial or business activity. But even if the testimony in the court's opinion doesn't rise to that level, under Mendoza, I believe it does constitute some evidence which the jury was entitled to consider and weigh in arriving at its decision as to whether there was a business purpose within the definition of shoemaker.
Which you concede is correct.
Yes, Your Honor. There's no question in this case, and none of the parties dispute that the law as it stands today or is asserting that it should be changed. This purely just whether this evidence fits within that definition. I think another factor that the court should consider in weighing the legal sufficiency of the evidence on the joint enterprise question is the fact that the position the petitioners are taking on appeal is entirely inconsistent with their attitude at trial. During trial, as I've stated, it seemed that the petitioners were almost bending over backwards to describe their trip to Fort Worth as a business trip. Their defense during trial to the joint enterprise theory was that at the time the accident took place, the business was finished. At page 196 of the statement of facts is an exchange between petitioner's counsel and Mrs. Ray, in which she describes the fact that she believed that at the time that they had left Fort Worth and the accident occurred, that the business, the joint commercial enterprise, had finished. That was their theory of trial. Now they've come back in hindsight and they're saying, well, we didn't really mean what we said back then. I think the court ought to take that into consideration. The effect of the Ray's argument, if one looks at the record and the evidence before it, there's not an abundance of evidence, as Justice Gamage points out, but I think that, to be honest, if anyone looked at these facts and took out the consideration that these parties were married, that it would be much easier to find joint enterprise under these facts. But the effect of the petitioner's argument is that marriage persons, practically speaking, should be excluded from joint enterprise. This court in Wilkinson versus Stevens rejected that rationale and held that married persons can interact as agent principal, can engage in joint enterprises, and that under the right facts, if those facts are there, that they should be governed by the same standards and the same duties and obligations as non-married persons. Turning to the agency question, the raised contention that the in their application that the marriage relationship was the sole basis for the jury's finding is incorrect. There's two elements to agency which we agree on. One is that Mr. Ray had to have been benefited by the trip to Fort Worth, and the other is that he had to have had some control over the destination or over Mrs. Ray's driving of the vehicle. I do not believe that there's any dispute in this case that Mr. Ray benefited from the trip to Fort Worth. Again, they said they came to Fort Worth to do business. He got a haircut. They delivered tax papers to their tax consultant. They ran some personal errands. And in addition to that, one thing that I neglected to point out in the brief is that we believe that their trip out to view their the property that they once owned and the shopping center built around that is also a benefit that Mr. Ray received as a result of this trip. The evidence is clear that there was a benefit. With respect to the control element, this court held in Shoemaker that where there's an owner-passenger situation, the owner has a right of control, the requisite right of control for the purpose of an agency situation by the mere fact of the ownership. In Shoemaker, there was a joint owner situation in that case, and the court held that all that's required is the right of control, and that that's established as a matter of law once the ownership is established, and it can only be rebutted by evidence or a showing of relinquishment of that control. And there is simply no evidence in this case that Mr. Ray relinquished his control. In fact, the evidence is just the contrary. On at least two occasions during their trip in Fort Worth, the record reflects that Mr. Ray directed or had some say-so in the destination that the Rays took. One is when Mrs. Ray stated that she took Mr. Ray to get a haircut from his barber 30 years. She stated, and I quote, "He felt that he just absolutely could not come to Fort Worth without getting his haircut," and she took him to get his haircut. The other fact, which I believe supports a finding of control, notwithstanding the joint ownership, is Mrs. Ray's testimony that when Mr. Ray's barber told him about the development going on around the property that they formerly leased, he said, quote, "Let's run on down." He said, "I want to see that shopping center." And again, that may not be just an abundance of evidence on that, but we do believe that that's more than a scintilla of evidence that Mr. Ray exercised control. But I would like to reiterate that we think that control was established as a matter of law by the ownership interest that Mr. Ray had under the Shoemaker case. There are two Court of Appeals decisions that have applied the right of control standard discussed in Shoemaker to in a family agency relationship. One case, this court denied the writ, the application for writ in, it's Webster versus Lipsy at 787-631. In that case, a mother owned a all-terrain motorcycle. Her son was driving it while he was herding some cattle, and she was sued for her son's negligence. And the court held that even though the mother was not with the son, that she had the requisite control over her son's activity by reason of the fact that she did own the motorcycle and she had instructed her son to go herd cattle. Another case, an older case, is a 1978 San Antonio Court of Appeals case, no red. It's DeAnda versus Blake. And in that case, a daughter was driving the mother to to a store to purchase shoes for the mother's son, and was negligent in the course of that trip and resulted in injuries to another party. And Chief Justice Cadena wrote that the negligence of the daughter in that situation should be imputed to the mother on agency grounds because the daughter was operating the vehicle at the mother's request and in her instance. If there's no further questions, the respondent would pray that the judgment of the Court of Appeals be affirmed in all respects. In the alternative, we would request that the court remand the case for new trial in the interest of justice. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court. The petitioner's position in this matter is that the finding of joint enterprise in this case was a fluke. There's no doubt about it. Miss Ray testified that they had business to attend to, business with their tax consultant. No one ever bothered to determine what these tax papers or what these papers that they were delivering to the tax consultant, what did they concern? Were these personal taxes, in which case they were not involved in a business enterprise? Were these commercial corporate income taxes? There was no evidence they were involved in a corporate venture at that point in time. There was never any evidence brought forward to determine what was the pecuniary interest involved. And we readily admitted it in our brief up front. And I listed, I think, the multiple times that Ms. Ray said, and in the different ways that she said that they were doing business. But they did business with a department store. They did business with a barber. They probably did business with a gas station somewhere along the line. Mount Pleasant's quite a drive from Fort Worth. But that is not what the Supreme Court in Shoemaker meant when it said that they didn't want to impose a basically commercial concept. And there was no evidence that these old folks or this elderly couple that had gone out back to Fort Worth were involved in a commercial venture. None. Now, the Rays did testify, Miss Ray testified, that when they moved out to Mount Pleasant, Mr. Ray had intended to get into this log cabin building business. And in fact, they had added onto their garage. That was the end of the testimony regarding a log home building or log cabin building business. Now, certainly the jury may can infer from that they had indeed gone into it. But how far out on the inferential limb can they go to then infer that these papers somehow concern the log business that they've already inferred existed? There's just no evidence here that these folks were involved in a pecuniary interest.
Counsel, I assume you made the same argument before the jury.
I was not present.
Well, whoever was arguing on behalf of the petitioner made this argument, I take it, to the jury and lost.
I'm certain of that.
Were you appellate counsel in the Court of Appeals?
No, Your Honor.
Well, whoever was arguing for the petitioner in this case made the identical argument in the Court of Appeals. At least the jury, at least 10 or more, and at least two judges of the Court of Appeals have held that there is some evidence, and more than that, of a business enterprise. There's sufficient evidence for the jury verdict. Now you're here on a hellacious burden. You're saying that there is absolutely no evidence on whether the jury verdict could be supported.
What I'm saying, Your Honor, is that the definition that the Supreme Court, I believe, intended in Shoemaker did not include simply going out and doing business with a tax consultant. That it intended that to apply to commercial situations, or basically commercial situations. And I think that is the distinction in this case. We haven't denied, I was up front, that they did business. But doing business and being in business, or having a business to earn a living, or to gain some sort of profit, are two different things, as far as I see.
It has to have a commercial context, what you're arguing.
That's correct.
Going to see your tax consultant, to prepare your taxes. It's not business. We're all required by law to file income tax returns or tax returns or pay other taxing entities.
That's correct.
Going to the barber shop is not a commercial enterprise for you. Going to buy makeup is not. Going to drive around the old neighborhood is not. You're saying it has no commercial context. There's evidence of what apparently she alluded to as business, but it doesn't meet the legal definition of a commercial enterprise.
That's correct.
It's joint enterprise or agency purpose.
That's absolutely correct, and that's what we believe the difference is in this case. If this couple going to see their tax accountant to deliver papers, if they're involved in a business venture as was meant by the Supreme Court, then I'm sure the vast majority of Texans in this state that pay their taxes will be shocked by that. I don't think that's what the court meant. I appreciate your time.
Any questions? That concludes argument on the second call. The court will take another recess.
The audience will please rise.